Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we start with the good. Yesterday, in passing, we kind of snickered at the idea of Lindsey Graham announcing that he's going to announce that he's going to run for president. That'll happen on June 1st. The more exciting news for conservatives is that Bobby Jindal formed an exploratory committee yesterday. The Louisiana governor says he will not make a final decision on whether to run for president until after the legislative session ends in Louisiana on June 11th. But most suggest that he probably will make a run. He's not considered top tier at the outset. But if you look at his record in Louisiana from a conservative policy perspective, it's one that a lot of folks should be pretty excited about.
I've been pretty open about the fact that Jindal's been a guy I've covered a lot, have a good relationship with. I think he's a great, smart, sometimes very innovative conservative. As a guy who likes him a lot, let me be blunt, he's gone pretty much nowhere so far. It is not quite campaigning status. He is about 1 or 2% in Iowa, maybe 1-3% in New Hampshire, and 1-3% in South Carolina, and about the same nationally. So particularly as someone who's reaching the point where it's starting to get kind of silly to talk about potential candidate Scott Walker, potential candidate Jeb Bush, look, we kind of know these guys are running for president. You don't spend an enormous amount of time putting together an effort and a super PAC and a fundraising apparatus, and in the case of Jindal, putting out really detailed national policy plans if you have no interest in running for president. So for one, I salute him for kind of, okay, get the charade over, we're running, we're in this. Technically, he's just forming an exploratory committee, but once again, like, the odds of forming an exploratory committee and saying, I've explored and decided no, are not terribly likely. When I spoke to his people about, look, you're at 2%, what's going on? They say, look, last cycle in 2012, everybody had about 1 month where they suddenly turned into the flavor of the month. They got the national spotlight on them, and they had some period in which they were front runner status. Michelle Bachmann, even Herman Cain, stuff like that. Well, they're betting that if you give Bobby Jindal the national spotlight, he won't just be a flash in the pan. He will demonstrate that he's got this really solid record in two terms in Louisiana. He also was a congressman before that. He was running the state health administration before that. He's a brilliant guy. To be bluntly honest, this is not necessarily going to be an easy guy to elect for some reason. The question is, can his appeal translate outside of Louisiana? I think his record of accomplishment deserves a long, hard, serious look, and I'm glad that he's in. And I'm also glad there's one less person we have to refer to as a potential presidential candidate when everybody can tell that they're actually running.
Jim, I saw one story yesterday that his approval rating is lower in Louisiana than President Obama. If we like his policy record, why is he struggling on the approval front down there?
Sure. A couple of things. One being the state economy is not doing quite as well as it used to, in part because the drop in oil prices. When the oil boom was going on, it was fantastic. This is a state that still has quite a bit of offshore rigs, and we all remember from the Deepwater Horizon experience and things like that. The other thing is, look, he has made cuts, and those cuts are not always popular. In fact, I saw in the American Conservative Rod Dreher writing a piece denouncing Jindal for cutting hospitals that were run by the state and were giant money losers. This is kind of a long, complicated plan to go through here, but basically he said, you know what, we're going to reorganize this. We're going to give people a lot more options for care at private insurance, and we're not going to get the state out of the healthcare business. This is not something we do well. This is not something we do efficiently and is a giant budgetary cost to us. Look, you cut things, it's going to hurt. Now, the interesting thing is you see conservatives saying, oh my goodness, you cruel, horrible, uncompassionate man, you've closed a hospital. If we on the right want to see budget cuts, we can't be the first one to complain when conservative lawmakers actually cut the budget.
Just for the mainstream media, if Jindal does run, that means we have an Indian American, two Hispanics, an African American, and a woman in this race, and the Democrats looking kind of monochromatic, you might say, at this point, Jim. Not that that should be our goal here on the conservative side. We always talk about merit, but the media loves to play these games, and the Republican field is looking a lot more like America than the other side.
You know, Greg, when you say monochromatic, you mean gray, right? Unlike, you know, the infamous movie and book, the Democratic primary is one shade of gray.
Very good. All right. Speaking of the Democratic field, Hillary Clinton once again in the bad martini. Yesterday, not a good day for Mrs. Clinton. Thanks to Judicial Watch, we now have Defense Intelligence Agency documents showing that we in fact knew that there was weapons smuggling going from Benghazi to Syria in the days leading up to the Benghazi attack, although Mike Morrell, the former acting CIA director, says we were not actually involved in it, but it's possible we might have known about it. He won't say, really. We also found out that Hillary Clinton was using a second email account, so that whole I'm just too much of a technical neophyte to use more than one email account, that turns out to not be true. The State Department says it won't release the email she actually is okay with us seeing until probably January. And if that weren't enough, the New York Times says Sidney Blumenthal was playing a huge role in terms of getting Mrs. Clinton's attention during the time she was Secretary of State, particularly as it related to Libya. Blumenthal, who, of course, was a very shady character during the Clinton White House days, especially with the Monica Lewinsky scandal, was not supposed to be involved in any way with the State Department because he was banned from a State Department job by aides to President Obama. Nonetheless, according to the New York Times, he was also employed by the Clinton Foundation to help with research, message guidance, and the planning of commemorative events. He had very important business interests going on in Libya, so he kept passing intelligence on to Mrs. Clinton that the Times reports appears to have come from a group of business associates that Blumenthal was advising as they sought to win contracts from the Libyan transitional government. So, Jim, it just never stops.
This kind of brings together a bunch of kind of developing threads on the story of Hillary Clinton at the State Department. You could say, all right, why does the private email list matter? And we talked in the past about the national security risks and the, you know, inability of having accountability and public records laws and things like that. In this one, it sounded like something out of a Christopher Buckley novel when you hear somebody say, oh, Sidney Blumenthal was advising her on Libya policy. The Three Martini Lunch listenership is a well-read, politically familiar audience here, but you may have forgotten because he hasn't been in the news for a while. But back in the Clinton years, Sid Blumenthal was the hatchet man. Sometimes he was working in the administration. Sometimes he was working in media as a totally objective reporter covering foreign policy. He just set himself up as you know, the guy who, if you criticize the Clintons, Sid, a.k.a. Sid Vicious, would come after you. And he earned that nickname. So the idea, yes, he'd written about foreign policy in the past, but the idea, like in all of his writings, I'd never heard about any particular familiarity with Libya or Gaddafi or tribal groups. And like, you look at it like, what on earth has him giving him advice to Hillary on Libya? And then you realize what would even make him interested in that? And there's a very simple answer. Money. There were a group of businesses that wanted to get in with the new Libyan government, and Sid Blumenthal was the guy who was going to do it. So this ties into that broader theme of U.S. foreign policy effectively being for sale to the highest bidder during the Hillary Clinton years. And what's kind of, I guess now we kind of know why she doesn't want to take questions. On the other hand, like, how can you run for president when this is the most immediate thing that you've done? And by the way, just how bad do you have to be, Sid Blumenthal, if the Obama administration doesn't want you anywhere near the process of setting policy?
Yeah, not good at all. And I think even his reputation was enough for the Obama folks to say, I don't think so. And that's probably because they were still very wary of the Clintons when she took the job of Secretary of State. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And we've got Iran pursuing nuclear weapons. Ramadi has fallen to ISIS. There are any number of domestic challenges. There's a lot of problems, foreign and domestic. The political media, though, in Washington yesterday, completely consumed by the fact that Barack Obama appears to have his own Twitter account now with the at POTUS label on it. So with all that's going on in the world, apparently this is the most important thing for us to focus on right now. What will Barack Obama say in less than 140 characters now?
We'd probably pick our third martini to be the crazy martini. This is one of those I just don't get it martinis, Craig, because like if, first of all, people are like, well, wait a minute, doesn't he have, well, he's got the official White House one, and then he's got the Twitter feed that is run by the old Obama for America and then Organizing for America campaign. So technically, there's not been one that Obama could just do around with, you know, BlackBerry Force One, his special presidentially secure BlackBerry. We're still left with this kind of bizarre situation in which, you know, so what? This is, you know, the guy who's got more ability to communicate what he's thinking to the American people than anybody else in the world somehow gets a Twitter account, and the entire press, oh, who is he following? Was it, is it a symbolic snub that he's not following Hillary Clinton? Ugh. It's a fluff story. And I guess, you know, there's room for that in the world. But the idea that this was suddenly a big news on a Monday when everything else is going on was just kind of bizarre. U.S. News and World Report used to say, you know, news you can use.
Yes.
Greg, how do I use this information?
You can now reply directly to him with your witticisms.
Actually, maybe that's a fun question. Who'll be the first person to get blocked by the president? There's a useful contest. So there you go. It's kind of strange, but we will see how it shakes out. If there's anything useful, again, for a guy who seems very banal and you know, long-winded in his those few moments he decides to answer questions from reporters, I guess we should be pleased that he'll figure out some way to do 140 characters or less.
That would be nice, because he does tend to drone on. So
Twitter's a great editor.
Jim, on that note, I'll let you get back to your own Twitter feed and the more important work that you do during the day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.